You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name is Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse. Today is Thursday, not Wednesday. I apologize for getting back to you guys a day late with the show. I was hoping to do one yesterday. I was trying to have a former player on, actually. Had the details worked out, and then we suck at technology and time zones. It didn't happen, and now it's probably not going to happen, so sorry for the one-day delay on that. Unfortunately, it's just probably not going to happen, so no interview with a player or media person this week. That will return next week, and Adam is not going to be able to do his show for tomorrow, so I'll be doing a What If this week. Yeah, that will be tomorrow's show. It will be fun, but today we're going to kind of scoop some stuff up on the fly because there's still stuff happening. There's still Pacers news happening. There's still people making content for us, and the NBA dropped some big news bombs today, so that worked out nicely. So we're going to start by talking about the NBA, talking about its return. Then we're going to move to the ESPN all-time Pacers starting five and conclude with some Last Dance thoughts because that is fresh in the news. Let's start with the big amount of news dumps we got today regarding the NBA return, starting with Shams Charania of The Athletic reporting the NBA is seriously considering, well, Shams Charania and Sam Amick, excuse me, talking about the NBA in serious talks to restart the season in Orlando for Disney World, which is pretty cool. Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports has been all over this the whole time. He's had sources from Orlando talking about how they're preparing hotels for potentially having players. That's directly from his Twitter feed. He's been all over it all day. They have Coronado Springs there, which is a large campus-style resort. And that he said that Adam Silver recently said that the single site, if they did it, where they had all the teams in one place, would be campus-style. So that could be a good place that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, so Disney appears to be the front runner, which is super interesting. The first stupid thing I looked up was, how have the Pacers done in the playoffs against the Orlando Magic? The answer is pretty good. 10-5 in total, although I believe they are 500 at 4-4 physically in Orlando. So only one loss at home to the Jazz, but irrelevant if they're playing the games in Orlando. They're playing the games in Orlando, but it seems like one that, you know, something like that would get out as a leak, and two, that, you know, like Keith said, there's some sort of prepping going on. I want to make sure, maybe I read that from someone else. I don't want to pin this on Keith if I am incorrect. But anyway, someone said that. Here we go. Keith Smith, sources from Walt Disney World tell me we are confident we'll be hosting the NBA in some fashion. It may not be the entire league, but we believe the NBA will be here to at least finish part of their season, still hurdles to cross, but we are preparing as if that is the case. So there's the preparing part. Okay, so the fact that that got out is super interesting and telling to me that, you know, if they're doing any kind of preparations, they've probably either been told or are heavily assuming that this is going to happen, which is encouraging, I think, for finishing the NBA season. And speaking of finishing the NBA season and how that might look, let's switch over to the other big news breaker, Adrian Wojnarowski, along with Zach Lowe. Man, the two dynamic duos just crushing the NBA return reporting today. They had a big report on teams expecting guidelines for player returns in June, very early June, saying that teams expect some sort of timeline from when they'll be allowed to expand player workouts from, you know, what they are now, if they're open, you know, if their gym is open, to include more team personnel and more stuff like that. For Indiana specifically, they are reopening the state in stages, and stage three was the one where gyms would open. That was supposed to start after May 23rd, which would be next Monday. However, Governor Eric Holcomb pushed that forward to the coming Friday tomorrow for you listening, just yesterday. So who knows, but if the Pacers, who have said many times that they are following state guidelines on that kind of stuff, continue to do so, I would assume that means they can have players in the practice facility come Friday, although I do not know. I have not asked anyone that information, but just connecting the dots, that seems like it may be the case, and I know a lot of NBA teams from reporting have already let guys in. Anyway, back to the report from Woj and Zach Lowe. They're discussing some sort of, the league is discussing some sort of plan where, you know, once teams are, the quote is 2-week recall of players. So once teams and players all return to where they're supposed to be, so for the Pacers, Indiana, you know, there'd be a short week or two of training camp, and then, of workouts, and then a 2 or 3 week training camp, and then games. So that would put us in like mid July or late July, and then there'd be games. And it says also in here the NBA is still considering two sites of Orlando, or is considering a two site format, including Walt Disney World and Vegas. So maybe there'd be like conferences in there or something like that. But I think the league is kind of ramping up for what seems like, based on all the reporting from, you know, The Ringer, ESPN, The Athletic, everywhere that's had, Yahoo, everywhere that's had boots on the ground for this, it seems like what's going to happen is all the teams are going to be in one or two places after this training camp. So the players will go, the order will be the players self-quarantine once they get to their site, and then they'll have workouts, training camp, and then they'll go to the one or two places, play the required regular season games to ramp up for the postseason, which that's what they can call it, whatever they want. That's just to get the regional network money. Whatever. I think that I've seen some people talking about that today, complaining, you know, those are going to be low quality games. There's no way around that, right? Because both playoffs are basically already set if you're only playing like 5 to 7 games just to play them, right? To get to your money from your networks, right? Those are going to be low quality basketball games. No team is fighting for playoff spots. Seeding is almost all guaranteed, except the Pacers are in a big fight still. But still, you know, those games for teams out of the playoffs will be very low quality. However, remember, getting that TV money is money for the league, and the players get 51% of that money to pay their salaries. So they do have incentive to play those games if it means that it can guarantee their salaries and potentially keep the salary cap up at a higher level for next season. You know, that could help players who are, it could behoove players who are going to be free agents this summer. So, it will probably be low quality basketball. It does kind of benefit both parties to have the games, even if it is totally non-transparently having regular season games is just for cash. But then the playoffs would be after that. So maybe August, we're looking at that kind of stuff. But that's what just it seems like reading between the lines of all the plans and all the reporting about where the sites will be. That's kind of what it seems like the NBA rollout is going to look something like, although I believe we'll hear more from Adam Silver in the next 10 to 15 days, given his original timeline that he gave. So yeah, that's where we're at with the reopening and where it pertains to the Pacers. And we might even hear tomorrow that they're back in the gym. Who knows? We'll see. I'm sure the team will announce it. A bunch of other teams have been announcing it, so we'll see. Let's move on to a subject that I am going to struggle with because I am really young, and a lot of the players on this list are really old, and from the ABA, the Pacers' all-time starting five as released by ESPN. I'm not sure how many of you have seen it, but I'm going to reveal it after I talk to you about Built Bar, of course, because Built Bar is the best-tasting protein bar ever, and I mean that sincerely. It is delicious. I've tried many flavors of it, and I've talked about it on every show this month. And now it's really hard to talk about products on the show that I've never tried or used. Thankfully, I've tried Built Bar, and I can say 100% that it is A, delicious, and B, super healthy. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They have tons of amazing flavors. They're all covered in chocolate, which makes them soft and easy to chew. They're great for if you're health conscious or if you're just looking for a nice, delicious little snacky treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, but high protein and fiber. They're really, really good for you. I highly recommend them. And if you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, you'll get $10 off your first order. So go to BUILTBAR, builtbar.com, and use that promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off and let them know that you came from the Locked On Podcast Network. So ESPN has been really kind to produce some sort of unique content / aggregation stuff for me. I'm just joking. Usually, you know, we are great at the show at coming up with our own content, but in these trying times, I'll take anything I can get. They are great, and they released an all-time starting five for every NBA team. Some of them are funny, just and kind of depressing, honestly, about the history of certain franchises. I learned a lot about the Hornets, for example. Some of them are awesome, like the Bulls and the Pistons. But let's talk about the Pacers one. I think it's interesting. I think it's good. I can offer my young perspective on it, which is probably wrong. I will defer to people who were either around for the ABA or at least old enough to grasp what was going on at the time. Tim Bontemps wrote up this segment. I'm not sure who made the decisions, but the Pacers one The two guards are Freddie Lewis and Reggie Miller. I think Reggie's the only one that I can lock in for sure. The forwards are Roger Brown and George McGinnis. And the center is Mel Daniels. Where do I begin here? So first of all, I think this is pretty good. Of what I know of the ABA, all the guys, non-Reggie division. Well, I don't have to talk about Reggie, right? We all know he's there. He's just there. He belongs. Freddie Lewis is where I originally flicked my eyes to, because six All-Star appearances, but only half of those were actually with the Pacers, which is interesting. And Paul George, I believe ESPN classified as a guard because in their blurb writing about him, so he's my first dispute to Paul George. You can classify him as a guard or forward, I think, given what he did younger in his career versus older. Either way, they picked Freddie Lewis over Paul George. So Freddie Lewis, three All-Star appearances in full seasons with the Pacers. I guess the season he officially was no longer a Pacer, he was also an All-Star. Anywhom, in the ABA years. So I, again, don't know much, if anything, about those years. Now, I know he was the playoffs MVP in 1972, which is one of his All-Star years. And dude could score like crazy. It looks like he was an okay passer as a point guard. So I don't think it's the wrong answer, especially because PG was here for less seasons than him. I think it's close, though, because Paul George had 8 years in a Pacers jersey, seven seasons, and Freddie Lewis had eight. And of those, only one was an NBA season, I believe. Or, yeah, it was when he came back after going to other teams in the NBA. But so it seems like that one could be a point of contention, right? Because I think you could for sure say Freddie Lewis is the more accomplished player, or at least the one who, you know, led the team to accomplishments. He was on championship teams. Again, he is that player for an MVP. He has the All-Stars. Paul George with the Pacers, by the way, had four All-Star appearances. So if you count the season that Lewis got traded away, I believe this is traded. I don't exactly know. He was not with the Pacers. So he only had three. So Paul George had more All-Star appearances with the Pacers, and I personally think Paul George is the most skilled player ever to play for the NBA Pacers. Now, I could be wrong about that, and that's a pretty brash take. I know a lot of people will put Reggie there, or even J.O., or you know, whoever. Chuck Person has been a take I've seen before. I don't agree with that one at all. But, you know, I think Paul George is stupid good. So that one, I think you could contend, right? That's probably the biggest contention, because the forward spots, Roger Brown, McGinnis, I think those two guys, McGinnis for sure, right? Probably one, if not the best, you know, those are the two best Pacers in history, is McGinnis and Brown. They're both ridiculous. I mean, McGinnis at the end of the ABA Pacers days just had some insane seasons, 30 points a game in the final ABA Pacers season, in his final ABA Pacers season before he transitioned to the NBA. He was just ridiculously good. Two times in the All-NBA. He was an MVP in 74-75 for the league. So he was just stupid good, two-time champ in the NBA, and then came back to the Pacers in the NBA. Still had some, you know, not nearly as awesome, but some good seasons to really round it out and get you know, NBA time with the franchise. You could call him the best in franchise history if you want. That one's easy. So Paul George is not replacing him. Roger Brown, of course, wasn't with the Pacers for his entire career, but, you know, the Raja deserves his spot. He also had some insane seasons, also a three-time All-Star, also a multi-time champion, just an insanely good player. He was a three-time champion, I believe, and four-time All-Star. So I think those two guys you could keep above Paul George. So I think the contention for Paul George is just Freddie Lewis. And I personally would pick PG over Freddie Lewis. But I wasn't, you know, this is one of those things where I just have to defer, because, first of all, still some raw emotion with Paul George. So I feel like there's some sort of bias against him. Understood. But also, I am not old enough to know anything about the ABA. I will defer to those with more knowledge and who were, you know, I have a better grip on what the team was like back then. Mel Daniels at center, great choice. Impossible to argue with. You know, the clearly the ABA era of the Pacers is the one. Another three-time ABA champion, seven-time All-Star, although one of those was not with Indiana. It was with Minnesota, actually, in the ABA. But just like video game stats, in his seasons with the Pacers, his six seasons with the Pacers, he averaged 19.4 points and 16 rebounds per game. I mean, obviously rebounding numbers were insane in the 60s and 70s. You know, guys just kind of missed a lot, and the whole game was played around the rim, blah, blah, blah. These dominant centers just put up insane numbers, and he was one of them. He was ridiculously good as a player. For those teams, he was one of the reasons they won so many titles in the NBA day. So I think he's a good answer. Two-time MVP, Rookie of the Year, 5 times All-NBA, although, again, that's NBA stuff. But he only played one season in the actual NBA with the New York Nets. So most of his career was ABA, but he was still ridiculously good. I was discussing on Twitter the Jermaine O'Neal exclusion. Mel is above J.O. I think that's pretty clear. Not that J.O. wasn't amazing. You know, top five MVP in his peak season with the Pacers, got the most improved. I think he was a 6-time All-Star with the Pacers. I don't have that number in front of me. But he had multi-time All-NBA as well. J.O. was amazing. He almost was a part of the team that won the finals in the actual NBA for the Pacers. And I think, if the brawl doesn't happen, J.O. is very highly regarded in Pacers history, but the brawl did happen. So I think Mel deserves a spot. He had a better career with the Pacers and arguably was a better player against the competition that was around back then. So that was a lot of words to say. My only qualm is I would have PG in over Freddie Lewis, although it does feel weird to have Paul George as a guard personally. But that's just me. And everyone come at me on Twitter and tell me why I'm wrong about, A, everything I just said about the ABA guys, and BY Freddie Lewis, or even someone else, should be in. So let's move on to the last thing I want to talk about today, which is just some general Last Dance stuff, because The Last Dance was really good, and the Pacers were prominently featured on the final episode. But, again, like last time, before we do that, I'm going to talk about Blinkist, because Blinkist is awesome. It's hard to find time to read anymore, and when you don't have free time, you can't read, and you can't get personally developed. You can't work on your personal development. Well, there's something to solve this problem for everyone now. You can use it on your phone, your tablet, whatever. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is awesome. It takes the best need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, condenses it down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. It's made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with an audio feature, it makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, while you exercise, basically whenever you have time. 12 million people already using Blinkist right now. Has a huge library. It's still growing and from all kinds of nonfiction books. So check it out. It'd be a great way to commute and make the most of that time when you're stuck in the car anyway. So again, with Blinkist, get unlimited access to read or listen to all this stuff right now for a limited time. Blinkist has a special offer just for you guys. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. Try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled BLINKIST.com/NBA to start your 7-day free trial. Go check them out. All right. This is the last time I'm probably going to talk about Last Dance. I did it on Locked On NBA on Monday. That was really fun. We had Locked On Jazz host David Locke was there, so we got to wallow in pity together. And Locked On Bulls host Matt Peck was also there. You know, we broke it all down. It was really fun to watch those two series, and you know, the reason the Bulls didn't come back. I learned a lot because I was youngish when all that was going on and wasn't as into basketball back then. But the Pacers stuff. So first of all, I really just enjoyed the way that was portrayed, because me and Will Furr talked about the best seasons in Pacers history about a month ago, and we had 2000 as the best season, and I think that's still true. They went to the finals that year, but yeah, I think it's been written about by Caitlin Cooper now, and then with this documentary coming out, 97-98 was probably the best Pacers team ever. It was probably better than the 2000 team. They were just a little younger with the similar talent. You know, those guys were just better versions of the players that actually made the finals in 2000, the first full season after the lockout year. So that was a big factor. That was probably the best team they had, and that's why they were able to push Jordan to the brink. I did love, again, that they got all the love, both from Michael saying, you know, outside of Detroit, that team was the hardest. Now, this was the only time they played Michael in the playoffs. Probably should have in 94. No, I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. I can't remember the year now. I'm just going to stop talking. 94, Michael wasn't in the playoffs. I can't remember what year I'm thinking of. Anyway, this is the only time they played him in the playoffs. They almost got him. If it weren't for the most ridiculous, I can't believe, you know, they talk about that entire game 7. Spent a long time on that game 7 because A, the Pacers jumped out to a huge lead, and B, all the media people apparently, I don't believe this, this is so retrospective, but all the media people they interviewed apparently thought that the Pacers were going to win this game when it was tied up late. I can't believe that for one second they didn't mention rebounding talking about this game, because it still blows my mind looking back. Pacers had 34 rebounds and 4 offensive rebounds. The Bulls had 50 rebounds and 22 offensive rebounds. That's the whole damn game. It finishes a 5-point game, and one team had 18 more offensive rebounds. Like, that's it. You know, MJ shot pretty bad that game. Scottie Pippen shot bad that game. The Bulls, in general, outside of Kukoc, shot bad. They shot under 40%. That's a recipe for winning, and the Pacers didn't win because they couldn't rebound for their life. The Pacers took 56 shots in this game in the slow-paced era. The Bulls took 76. They had 20 more shots. They had so much more wiggle room. I can't believe they didn't talk about that in the episode because Mike didn't play that good, you know? That's not really a gripe. That's just from a Pacers perspective, it seems like that would have been what I would have talked about. But it wasn't from a Pacers perspective, obviously. The triumph of Michael Jordan shooting 9 for 20-something. You know, they had to get that in there. But I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was cool that they, you know, got Jalen to talk about. I liked when he said, we had a squad, and Reggie talking about how their trash talk story. Some of the cool stuff I liked is, you know, this is a Bulls doc, right? And the Bulls had the camera crew following the team around. But then, just from collateral, I guess collateral damage is the wrong word, but just collateral effect of that was, you know, you get to see Michael sitting in the chair in Market Square Arena for whatever reason. He's just chilling, and Reggie shows up in the same area, and they get them dapping and saying it's going to be a battle, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, after the Bulls won, when MJ had some words for Larry Bird, even though, you know, obviously they both consider themselves or consider each other to be legendary, incredible players. That's why that interaction was so interesting. But I really enjoyed that too. So something that I wanted to talk about that the doc didn't talk about at all was game 6 of this series, because I can't believe they glossed over it, right? So the way they were doing this is they get through game 4, right? And the Pacers just tied it up, and then they have Michael say something like, I think maybe after game 4 of the series, in real time, the Jazz had just punched their ticket to the finals or something, because then they went on this really long tangent about the Bulls playing the Jazz the prior season and Malone winning MVPs and stuff like that and how that fueled Michael. But the Pacers series is still like kind of ongoing and lingering. That, you know, and then they come back at the beginning of the last episode, and we're just in game 7 of this series, right? So they totally skipped over game 6. And game 6 seems like it was exactly what this doc needed for the story of and lore of A, MJ, and B, the game 7 that happened, because that game was full of drama, and they spent the whole time talking about the Pacers, you know, and they showed the Reggie push off and stuff like that, and they showed, you know, the Pacers dominate game 3. It's like they had MJ and, oh man, who was the center? Bill Wellington talking about how much they respected the Pacers and how good they were. It's like the perfect way to show how good the Pacers were is game 6, because Michael was awesome. He had 35 points. He shot 12 for 23. He was awesome. Scottie was pretty good, 19 points. And Reggie sucked. Reggie was 2 for 13 with 8 points. And the Pacers still won. They just totally glossed over that game like it didn't happen. They skipped it because they were on the Jazz tangent. And, like, the doc was awesome. I'm not a documentary maker. It's just, like, from the Pacers' perspective, it seems like they skipped over, you know, a drama-filled game that the Pacers won because they were really good, and they could even beat MJ when he was playing really good, right? Like, Rick Smith was out of his mind that game. That might be his signature. Well, no, he has the 6 shot against the Magic. One of his signature career moments. That they were, you know, him and Dale basically carried the Pacers to this win over Michael Jordan. Like, that seems like a game they would want, especially because it was filled with drama and they won it late, you know, all this kind of stuff. It just, that really bugged me from a Pacers perspective of I just wanted more of that game. You know, it was tied with 19 seconds left. It was tied. It was that late in the game. I mean, they had it. So it was very interesting. But in general, I really loved that episode. I just thought it was really good. It was cool to hear from the people who were willing to talk, at least, from the Pacers' perspective. And and just see it all again. You know, Reggie saying he lightly pushed off was really funny and stuff like that. It was just really enjoyable. It was cool that they focused in on Michael missing the three at the end of game four, and just how everyone thought it was going in. You know, I've only seen replays of it, obviously. So I know in advance that it's not going in. It's kind of funny because, so I remember this story a long time ago of someone who, when the Colts went to the Super Bowl, they were gone for 3 weeks on a mission trip, and they came back and they were rewatching all the games. They were talking about like getting frustrated watching the game, and then being like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna win." Like, why am I getting frustrated? It's kind of the opposite for me. I can't zoom out like that and remember that. So when I would rewatch this game, I was like, "Oh, Michael missed, whatever." You know, no emotion hit me. But seeing it in the doc finally made like the gravity of like, "Oh, like that double clutch three was almost like one of the low points of Pacers fandom history, that Michael Jordan just hit an insane shot to all but eliminate them from the playoffs." But yeah, really good doc, and I did, again, I really enjoyed in general just the way they talked about that Pacers team and the video they used and the respect given to that team, because again, it probably was the best team in franchise history. So really cool, or an NBA franchise history. I gave love to the ABA guys earlier. I got to continue to do so. So yeah, that was me talking about all the filler Pacers news going on recently. Sorry again for no Wednesday episode and no interview for the day. I was hoping it would work out, and it did not, unfortunately. So yeah, we'll see you guys tomorrow. I'm going to do my own What If series on what if the Pacers traded Paul George for not Victor Oladipo and Sabonis. I'll try to cover the Celtics, Lakers, and Cavs trade offers. So stick around for that. Don't forget to check out Built Bar and Blinkist. That's all for today's show. We'll see you guys tomorrow.